A More Perfect Union, a look at labor's place in the presidential election.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Stacey Vanek-Smith in for Jeremy Hobson. Mitt Romney eked out a victory in the Iowa caucus last night, edging out Rick Santorum by just 8 votes. Candidates now move to New Hampshire to duke it out in a primary there. President Obama is on the campaign trail as well. He'll be speaking just outside Cleveland today. Ohio is an important swing state in the election and has also been the site of a major union law battle. Last November, unions scored a big win for collective bargaining rights. Will organized labor be an election year issue? Jeff Tyler has more.
Public sector workers like firefighters and teachers campaigned last November to overturn a new law limiting collective bargaining. And they succeeded. But was this really a sign of greater union influence? Greg R. Lawson is a policy analyst with the conservative Buckeye Institute. He says the influence of labor is limited to public sector unions.
There's not necessarily any evidence that shows that the private sector unions are kind of having this massive renaissance.
Mike Podhorzer, political director of the AFL-CIO, disagrees.
I've never seen a time when there's as much enthusiasm and unity within the labor movement to fight back on these things.
Fighting back requires money for things like advertising. Roger Geiger is with the Ohio chapter of the National Federation of Independent Business. He says it's tough for small businesses to raise funds compared to organized labor.
They have a huge built-in advantage, and that is that they can use union dues for political purposes.
Money from outside Ohio is expected to flow to the state from both sides in this battle. Professor John Russo studies labor at Youngstown State University. He says labor unions don't have to match their opponents' fundraising efforts dollar for dollar.
I think that the manpower that organized labor has, together with all the community groups, make it very difficult for the Republicans to win.
But he says it will be close. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
A mixed morning for the markets. London's FTSE is up 0.1%. Germany's DAX is down 0.4%. And mama, don't take my Kodachrome off the New York Stock Exchange. Kodak just got a warning from the NYSE that it will get booted off the big board if it can't boost its average stock price above $1 a share. U.S. markets made a strong showing yesterday. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 1.4% to close at 12,397. One thing weighing on the markets this morning, worries about Italian bank UniCredit. Italy's Prime Minister Mario Monti has been passing measures to try and stimulate the country's economy. For instance, starting January 1st, stores can legally stay open 24 hours a day. Italian stores had been restricted before. Many couldn't sell on Sundays or late nights. The BBC's correspondent Alan Johnston joins us now from Rome. Hello, Alan.
Hi. Hello.
How will keeping shops open 24/7 help the Italian economy?
Well, it's not just shops that are affected. It's bars and restaurants as well. And the hope is that you'll get a much more flexible sort of commercial environment, and shoppers are expected to like it.
There have been some serious objections in the last few days, from what I understand, though. Why are some Italian shopkeepers against this?
They worry that what you're seeing here is the coming of a much more cutthroat, much more competitive type of environment. The shopkeepers say, if Italians don't have any money, which they don't at the moment, they would say because they're taxed too heavily, then it doesn't matter how long you stay open if the people haven't got the cash to spend. The shopkeepers are opposed to this, just want the government to look elsewhere for solutions to the economy's very serious problems here.
Well, Alan, speaking of that, what are some of the other efforts that have been made to encourage Italian competitiveness?
What we've seen so far has been cuts in government spending and new taxes. But now we're about to see what the government calls phase two, which is an effort to find ways to stimulate the economy, to create growth, which Italy very much needs, and to create jobs for young people. What you notice really strikingly is that so many of the best and brightest young Italians tell you that they don't feel there's any future for them here, and that they're talking about going away almost anywhere, work abroad, where they feel they have more opportunities. And there's going to be a lot of confrontation along this sort of battle line here in Italy in the months ahead.
The BBC's correspondent Alan Johnston in Rome. Alan, thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thanks very much.
American Public Media announces the Splendid Tables new book, How to Eat Weekends, with dozens of new recipes, now available at bookstores nationwide.
The low-calorie, natural sweetener stevia is set to show up in more drinks and desserts this year. Its market share grew exponentially in the U.S. last year, and now Europe is fixing to get a taste. The European Union greenlit use of the sweetener last month, Marketplace's Eve Troe reports.
Interest in the zero-calorie sweetener stevia has grown in part because of new concerns about real sugar and its link to obesity. Ads for Truvia, the most popular brand of stevia, play up those fears.
I loved your sweetness, but you're not sweet. You made my butt fat.
And Truvia plays up another increasingly important trend, all natural. Stevia comes from a South American plant, and it's on your cafe table in a green packet. The stuff in those pink, yellow, and blue packets comes from a lab. David Jagow at the research firm Mintel says stevia costs about 7 times as much as those chemical sweeteners. To keep the price down, new products, from yogurt to soda, will mix stevia with real sugar.
So it's not about zero-calorie positioning. It's more about a reduced sugar positioning, which seems to be a message which resonates pretty well with consumers.
Because, he says, that fits with yet another consumer trend this year, balance. In Los Angeles, I'm Eve Troe for Marketplace.
And finally, a study out today from Georgetown University looked at census data to figure out which college majors had the highest number of unemployed graduates. Topping the list, architecture. Recent grads had an unemployment rate of nearly 14%. Arts majors came in second at 11%. Humanities majors rounded out the top three, 9.5% were unemployed. In Los Angeles, and the proud owner of a degree in comparative literature, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. And this is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
The economy's better, but still not great, and it affects all of us, of course, but also countries that are far, far away.
We then had 2.4 million people in crisis. The prices had doubled, and the outlook was not good.
I'm Kai Rizdal, the macroeconomics of food aid, and the news from Wall Street as well. That's next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.